Welcome to The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show, so stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point. Holy shit, listeners. This is our 100th episode, 100, and it's going to be a banger. We are so excited to share James Lawrence, the Iron Cowboy. Have you ever heard of him before? Ever seen his Netflix documentary? Ever read his book, Iron Cowboy, Redefine Impossible? This crazy son of a bitch did 101 full distance triathlons in consecutive days. I've never want to do that, but what I loved is his mindset, and I wanted him to share that story with you on our 100th episode. Let's go.
This is To The Point, a Rhino Experience, voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts, cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
What is up, To The Point listeners? Have we got a banger for you today on multiple, for multiple reasons, man. It's a big day here on To The Point. I am your host, Chris Yano, along with my co-host, Mr. Tall Paul Redmond, rocking the little baby stash he's got going on there. But we have another guest host today, too. And it is my man, my friend, Mr. Dan Antonelli, Kick Charge Creative, is a strategic partner of ours at Rhino Strategic Solutions. Dan, what's welcome. It's your first time being a co-host, brother.
What's up, boys? I feel like I'm so famous, this dude, whole thing. I'm here.
Your family, bro. Your family, you're in it. You're in it. And listen, it worked out like this was the universe in action because...
just works like
it
that.
It just is awesome because, you know, both of you are into cycling. And it just so happens that our guest that's on today might have rode a bike a time or two.
A time or two.
Might have done that, but a time or two.
A few times.
I call it dabbling.
Dabbling. He's dabbling. Dabbled in cycling just a little bit. Hey, man, I saw a video. I can't remember. I think it was on your documentary where you, like, ate shit on a bike and dumped it. I think you were a kid. Like, you were just a little boy. You dumped it and got off and were, like, cheering.
I was like, yeah.
I think that's pretty indicative of, like, kind of what the mental toughness, like, how tough this kid is. He ate it on this video, and then he gets up and, like, cheers. So it's pretty funny.
Who knew that would set the standard for what I do the rest of my life?
Right? It's so awesome.
Eat shit and celebrate.
I'm super stoked to have you on, you know, and I'm going to go ahead and do the introduction first, and then I'll kind of talk about some more things. But we do have the Iron Cowboy, Mr. James Lawrence, on the show today. And if you don't know who he is, just Google it, and then you're going to be amazed. Sure. But listen, you're going
to
hear.
About to find out.
It's amazing. And so Guinness World Record triathlon holder, author, phenomenal speaker, bro. Like, crush it on your speech, man. Anytime I get goosebumps or you make me emotional, I know it's good. And so for being such a tough guy, man, I know there's a heart in there pounding away too. I saw a little bit of that vulnerable side to you.
You have to, when you've got five kids and four of them are girls.
That's right. I got three girls, one boy. You got four girls, one boy.
I got three girls too, man. They're rough. It's rough.
Well, I am excited, man, to have you on here. And thank you for making the time for us. I know you get tons of inquiries, brother. And let me just tell you what, your daughter, Lucy, she's a champ. She's fantastic, yeah, dude. She was like on it on trying to help getting us squared away. So
she's amazing.
And so anyhow, if you haven't, you know, heard of James Lawrence, I want to just mention a few things too that I think are really important for you to know. And that is, dude, you got a book that I was able to get. You know, we got to see, like, quickly meet each other kind of across the room at RoofCon where you were speaking. Yeah. And I was able to get your book, Iron Cowboy, Redefine Impossible. I'm only about 40 pages in, man, to that thing. So it's because I got sucked into the documentary and I started listening to the podcast. I listened to my man Ed Milet's podcast with you just to kind of hear what Ed was saying and heard your story. And but check out his book, Iron Cowboy, Redefine Impossible, which you can get on Amazon, or pretty much, I guess, probably the book. Do you have any other locations where you can snag that thing, James?
Yeah, Amazon's the best place. And if you want a signed copy, just ironcowboy.com.
Right on. And then obviously awesome. You can check out the documentary too. I found it on Amazon Prime. I don't know if it's cool. Yeah. So like I saw it on there, I watched it, but
the documentary's on Prime.
Yeah, it was. It's pretty sweet. So I would recommend you go and check it out. But this, I'm talking about a guy that has mastered mental toughness, and we all go through it. So even though he's not, you know, in the HVAC business, the plumbing business, in the you know, in the electrical business, roofing business, whatever it is, his business is actually, I would say, arguably a little bit tougher, for sure, mentally tougher.
Yeah.
Based on what I've heard. But a lot of these things are applicable when you say it too, because we all run into the same problem, like these mental traps that we get in, that we make ourselves believe that we can't move our businesses forward because we can't do this or can't do that, or somebody does this better than me. I've certainly fell into that trap too, you know, growing our company. But a lot of times I think I heard, you know, statistic, I'm going to get it wrong, I know James is going to correct me, but it's when you think that you are done, you still got another 40% left in the tank or something along those lines, where point being is when you think you're done, you're actually not even close to being done. It's your mind kind of playing tricks on you. So everybody that's listening to this podcast right now, I want to make sure you take copious notes. All right. So this is the start of your journey. That might be the biggest word I've used in a long time. Copious.
That's good.
So, hey, but real quick, dude, you know, one thing I didn't know that I found out, and I love bringing this up every chance I get, because anytime we have somebody who's into cycling that comes on, Paul loves to go on this rant about how he's likes cycling too. But I don't know if you guys know this or not, but my man, James Lawrence, was a wrestler.
Always. It all comes back to wrestling.
That's right, man. I wrestled all through high school and college.
103.
That's right. I was a little guy, just a little bitty guy. So I respect it made me understand a little bit more about who you were, because I love a good wrestler mentality.
Dude, I love it. I think, I get asked all the time, hey, how do I become more mentally tough? And so I started to like go back in my journey and kind of see where the mental toughness journey started, because my answer to that question is we're all born with a certain level of mental toughness, and then it's a skill set that you have to cultivate and grow. And so I kind of started to backtrack my journey and where it kind of all started. And it was through sports and athletics, and then specifically I gravitated towards wrestling and ended up being doing wrestling full time. And so I attribute a ton of my mental toughness beginnings back to those days of wrestling. I love individual sports. Like if I win or lose, it's my fault.
Yep.
And there's a lot of lessons on the mat that you can learn when it's just you, another guy, and if I win or I lose, it's my fault. And then I got to make adjustments and come back to the mat and see if I've improved. And it proves always right in the pudding how much work you put in. You just got to keep showing up.
A lot of personal accountability in that one. So that's actually what I liked about it too, is that you could be on a team, but it was on me. Like how much work and effort I put in was on me. If it was like, you know, Christmas break and I knew people were going to go and play in the snow, I'd be the guy that would go and run. And then I would think, hey, I at least ran one more day than this guy did, so I should be better than him, or I should be more prepared than him. At least how I kind of built it up mentally in my own brain of figuring out what makes me better than the next, you know, opponent. Not that it always worked out, but it certainly was helpful.
In theory.
Hey, listen, by the way, I want to say this too before I get into it. As I've gotten to watch some more of the stuff that you've done, I want to commend you on something that is also extremely important to me. Regardless of all the success and the stuff that you've had, going for you since running the 50-50-50 into the 100, I mean, your wife, Sunny, is a rock star. Dude, she's hardcore, isn't she?
Dude, she's intense. Actually, she should be your next podcast guest.
Done.
I'm pretty sure at one point in time when I was talking to you on Instagram that Sunny took over, because it changed real quick. I was like, oh, I think that might have been her. She's protecting me or being protective right now.
It was probably Lucy.
Lucy's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I could tell like she's a solid rock, and I love how you say we all the time versus I on your journey. Like that was something I took away from your presentation. And it's not just, you know, you just talked about being in an individual sport, you know, and you kind of going and doing these things. Yes, you did them, but you had a lot of people doing these things with you. So it's we, it's you, it's the team piece of it. So I commend you, man, for making sure that you share that glory with those that helped you all along the way.
Thank you.
I'm going to go down the Q&A list, and boys, I want you guys just to kind of chime in along the way too. If you have something, let's try and at least stay somewhat on track if we can.
Chris, can I throw something out there? Kind of a theme today, and I don't know if we mentioned it. Maybe I'm off base here, but isn't this our 100th episode? or close to our 100th episode. Aren't we getting around there?
So it is our 100th episode. Yes.
Wow.
However, I was going to bring it up a little bit later. So thanks, Tall Paul, for throwing that out
there. I ruined it.
We haven't even gotten to that part yet, but yes, this is our 100th episode.
It doesn't mean anything to anybody at this point, so we can still surprise them.
That's right.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, they don't even know the context and the special, like, this is a special day. So it back, is a special back to day. Your questions, Chris.
And the listeners, now you're going to just keep listening to connect the dots. You got it, James.
I got to know why.
So here you go. So let's go ahead and get this thing rocking and rolling. Now, you know, everybody has a start to their journey, and it might look different. It might, it's not always the same start to your journey. Like my journey obviously looks different than probably yours, Dan, you know, and starting your business and so on and so forth. And I've noticed that, you know, growing from being an athlete, a collegiate athlete, and loving individual sports where I'm on a team where, so James, a little context too, is I used to race cars. Obviously race car, I'm in the car racing it, whether IndyCar or whatever it is. And, but I have a team, people trying to make my car just right for me to make me faster, but I'm in that car driving. I did wrestling. I was a bull rider for 2 years on the professional bull riding circuit, believe it or not. But cool. If you notice a pattern there, it's kind of these individual sports that I like to have done. And I just like to challenge myself to go down this path. But I don't know that I always knew exactly what I was. I just kind of did it. I didn't really put a plan in place. I just knew like, hey, I got to keep learning from what I'm doing and just start the process and start to learn from it. So everybody's journey is a little bit more. Maybe some people are more planned out than mine. Maybe yours was more planned out than mine. I'm ADHD, so I'm probably all over the place on trying to figure out how did I start my own journey. But everybody has one. And what was yours? Would you say that like that wrestling was the start of everything for you?
I mean, looking back on it, that would be the start of my journey. And like you, I've kind of gravitated towards individual sports too. Like, if you look at the three sports that I love to do the most, it's wrestling, golf, and triathlon. And all three of those are individual type sports that require obviously coaching and the team and everything to get you to that moment. But then it's all eyes on you. I think my entire career has been building blocks or foundational to where I am today. And you know, everybody is on a different journey and everybody's starting point is different. And I love that you don't have it all figured out and you're still on your journey and you shouldn't. And most people are, this is why people fail, is because most people are continually in that planning phase before they start to execute. And I could still be planning the 30 Ironmans around the world record because I want to get that perfect. But every piece of the puzzle for me is a stepping stone and a learning platform in order to do the next. Because if I was just trying to plan the perfect event, I'd never get to something like the 100, because each one of those was a learning process to get to the belief system and the experience that I could tackle the next part of my path. And if you don't start, then doors will never open. And you won't learn the lessons you need to learn because you don't know what lessons are to be learned because you're sitting and putting pen to paper trying to map out the perfect plan. And that's the perfect plan to failure, because at some point in time, you have to start. And I want everybody to understand that none of us start out as the expert. I believe I showed this picture at RoofCon when you were there, but there was a picture I showed in the middle of my presentation. It was me in my very first triathlon where I'm gripping to the edge of the pool, gasping for air, trying to figure out how to swim. Nobody would have said that guy right there is going to go on to set endurance sports history. But that's where my journey started. And I'm so glad I started and just really dove in and just started to consume and put mentors in my path and coaches in my path, surrounded myself with experts and people that I could learn from. And I just started to soak everything up that I could. And eventually I started to grow in knowledge and we started to do these big campaigns and one thing led to a next. But if I didn't start, it never leads to a next.
Yeah. Of course. I think this is where a lot of people too, is the analysis paralysis kicks in. You start to overthink the whole thing and then you end up doing nothing or you do minimal. You know, something I gave in my keynote at RoofCon that I've done, that these guys have heard me say multiple times too, is, you know, a lot of people come in and they take notes or they, and their intention is good. You know, the ambition is there, you know, to try and learn from the event or learn from what you said, James, or from Ed or from, you know, John or whoever else was speaking. But then they go home and it's like back to normal. Like you fall in this routine. And sometimes I feel like that routine is like the death, you know,
no execution,
and there's not any action that is followed up with the ambition.
But I saw Tommy Liu post on Instagram today. He always holds up those signs that I was writing on it. Yeah. He says, knowledge isn't power. It's applied knowledge and doing something with it. That is power. Because there's two types of people. There's the person that never shows up and doesn't do anything in their lives, and they're just a fat, lazy turd. Yep. And then there's the person that shows up to everything, consumes everything, but does nothing with it. Well, they're just a consummate content gatherer. And then there's the individual that shows me with their actions after they've gained the knowledge and does something with it. That's the guy that I like. That's the guy that's going to be successful. That's the guy that goes out and seeks knowledge, surrounds himself with mentors, coaches, and experts, and then actually goes out and starts applying, trying in the trenches, doing this works for me, this doesn't, figuring out what is going to be their best modality of using that information. So those are kind of your three types of people. And I have a lot of respect for number three, the person that actually has a desire to learn and gain knowledge and then takes that knowledge, applies it, and then tweaks it for them so that it works best for them on their journey.
So where were you when you decided to be that third person, and what did it look like, and where are you now? Tell our listeners.
I thought you were going to ask me, where was I when Tiger Woods won the Masters?
Well,
you can probably answer that, right?
After the greatest sports comeback in history. Unbelievable.
How do you really feel?
And I know exactly where I was, and I was crying. Restate your question, please.
So when did you decide to like be the radical action-oriented person you are now? What was that first moment like, and where are you now? Explain to our listeners kind of the journey you've been on with, you know, with triathlon and with all that over the years.
With the full distance triathlons.
Yeah. Yeah. What's crazy is I'm not naturally that third person. It's something that I have to really work on. I am just like everybody. I think inherently, we are lazy men. And a lot of us, you don't want to work hard, and you don't want to take you want to take the path of least resistance, but that's not where growth comes from. And so I think I learned a lot of those lessons through wrestling. I learned, self-control and management of my mind through golf, and then triathlon and the journey that we've been in. I mean, I've broken three world records. I've ridden my bike to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro. I've run 235 miles across Greece. We've done, just 100 alone was 14,000 plus miles in a quarter of a year with 0 days off. And so it's all of those things combined where you gain that desire or understanding about being that third person. And you understand like, oh, the other two have zero benefit and will leave me standing still in life. And actually, I don't believe anybody's standing still. You're either moving forward or you're moving backwards. And so if you're not doing anything, taking action, you're actually slipping backwards, because everybody's goal should, you know, when I'm 35, I shouldn't be the same person as when I was 30. When I'm 40, I shouldn't be the same person when I was 35. You should always be evolving and growing. And that just takes action. And it's interesting because I've got kids, and they are a huge driving force for me, right? Like I always want to, kids are, you know, they're sponges and they're always watching. And so for me, I just want to be the best example I know how, and they're a great motivator, you know, because my responsibility for bringing them into the world is I've got to get them ready to go out into the real world. And if I'm sitting there, you know, pizza, porn, and video games, that, you know, my kids are probably going to go down a bad road, and they're going to not end up being contributing members to society. And so they are great motivators to be a person number three and continually to show up on your journey and to push those boundaries and those barriers.
A quick shout out to I love that you kind of have the whole family involved in everything, like the whole process like that, because I'm 100% that guy. It's Lucy, Lily, Darcy?
Daisy.
Daisy, Dolly, and
Quinn.
Quinn.
I think you did better than most of family members.
Once you have more than four, you can't expect anyone to actually know you. Good job, Chris. Look at you. Really did go deep on this prep.
Well, I'm telling you, like, I was in it because I love, like I said, anything to do with mental fortitude, mental toughness, like, I'm all about, because I believe it's applicable to everything.
Not that you have to in the future, but this is how you remember it. L's before D's and flowers in the middle.
There you go.
There you go. Now
it's that simple.
Next time I'm going to remember that.
So, You've both mentioned toughness a few times. I want to define toughness. I want to give some context here. So give us some context around what the 50-50-50 was, and then what was the 100? People hear triathlon, they can kind of put two and two together, but explain what a full distance triathlon is. And can we not say Ironman? Is that not a word we're allowed to say?
Oh, this is great. Hold on. Go off, James. Tell them.
So what it is we just can't put it in print.
Got it. Okay.
So we'll do a full disclosure right now. I'll explain it real quick. A triathlon is anything: swim, bike, run, in that order.
Yep.
There's four traditional distances of triathlon: sprint distance, which is the shortest; Olympic distance, which is what they do in the Olympics; half distance; and then full distance. Each one of those double each time they get longer. Okay. So an Olympic is a double of sprint. Half is a double an Olympic, full is double of the half.
Yep.
The full distance has been brilliantly marketed by a company called the World Triathlon Corporation, owned by the Chinese, and they have branded the full distance triathlon an Ironman. So an Ironman is a company that has owned the space in marketing. So they would be someone like Band-Aid, or Kleenex, or Xerox. They've just done such an amazing job at marketing that the general public associates Ironman with a full distance triathlon. They're very protective of their brand. And so we can't write it. I can't have it on my website because I didn't do an Ironman. I did a full distance triathlon.
Right.
So that's the real quick version of it. So my history is I broke the world record for the most half Ironman events. I actually did official events in 2010, which led me to a 2012 journey where I did 30 official Ironman events in 11 countries. And then I said, you know what? I hold that world record. I want to do consecutive Ironmans. Well, I had to do consecutive full distance triathlons because there's no Ironmans on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. There's not even 50 events in the entire US. And so what I did was I did 50 full distance triathlons covering 2.4 miles of swimming, 112 miles of biking, full marathon run, 26.2 miles for a total of 140.6 miles. So that we did an Ironman or a full distance triathlon distance every single day for 50 consecutive days, but we did one in each of the the 50 United States. We started in Hawaii, went to Alaska, met the team in Washington where the motorhome and my five kids met us, and then we did the lower 48. So in 50 consecutive days, we hit all 50 states logistically, and we'd covered 140 miles of swimming, biking, and running each day. That led us to a worldwide speaking tour where I got to speak in 48 different countries. We wrote the book, the documentary came out, our life changed. It was unbelievable. We now have a thriving business over it. 2020 happens, the pandemic hits, the world shuts down, my calendar gets wiped clean, I'm bored, I come up with the Conquer 100, because the original goal of the 50-50-50 was to find out how many consecutive full distance triathlons I could do. Well, logistics and chaos got in the way, and I was averaging less than 4 hours of sleep a night, we were completely exhausted, we were always dealing with problems, and so I came up with the Conquer 100 to truly find out how many times I can consecutively do 140.6 miles. So we set the goal at 100. And that's 140 miles a day for a quarter of a year, totaling 14,060 miles. That was accomplished March 1st through June 8th, 2021.
Oh my gosh.
I don't even know where to start. I have so many questions.
Yeah.
Go.
Because you did 100. And I was following the journey on Instagram. Okay. So, you know, your team around you, led by your daughter, I think, was kind of giving people updates, and people were, as you got closer toward 100, people started to gather around, and maybe they'd swim with you a little bit and run with you a little bit and bike with you a little bit. And I was getting chills as we were building towards 100. I'm telling you this from my perspective. So I'm watching this play out, and I see the 100th day, and I see all these people around you that love you and know you and have been following your journey. And I see this massive amount of people following you to the finish line at 100, right? And I see that lights go down over your home in Salt Lake, right? I put my phone down. I go to bed. Yeah. I get up the next morning. I'm going to cry. I get up the next morning and I look on my phone and you're back in the water. Yeah. By yourself. No friends, no family, no fanfare, no attention. 101. Why did you do 101?
That's a great question. Like I said, I travel around the world. I coach people. We talk about mental toughness. One of the number one questions I got every Q&A after the 50 on that speaking tour was, could you have done 51? And I was like, yeah, I could have done 51. I just didn't want to. And so one, I wanted to take the question, did you do 101, off the table? But one of the things that I teach is you can do one more. And I didn't want to be the speaker that gets up and tells a story and tells someone to do something and doesn't or hasn't done it themselves first. And I, with my kids, I tell them, you lead from the front. You set the example. You are the leader of your friends. You set the example. You push your boundaries. You can continue to show up. You've got grit. You've got toughness. I didn't feel I could say any of those things with confidence had I not gone out and done one more. Now, we were, I mean, broken. Like, I can't wait for the new documentary to come out, but I can't put into words 140 miles a day, no sleep, chaos, what your body's trying to do, what the nervous system is doing. You know, people just assume, hey, it was the 140 miles a day. No, as soon as you stop, you've got recovery. You've got, you know, trying to figure out how to sleep. When I'm sleepy, my body is in fight or flight, trying to figure this out. I'm having night tremors and full body convulsions and hot sweats. And, you know, it was 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, no days off for a quarter of a year. That's intense. So imagine you've achieved the goal. You've exceeded everybody's expectation. There is no asterisk. There's no question. You covered every mile. Like we mentioned when we were off the air, day number one was 18 degrees outside. I mean, we executed to perfection. And I mean, on day 59, I had a catastrophic bike crash. I got knocked unconscious, and we just recently found out that I broke my L5 vertebrae in that crash. And I did 41 more Ironman full distance triathlons with a busted back. And it's because I said I was going to do 100. And then when we had accomplished the goal and I was broken and I was defeated and I was exhausted, I could have stayed in bed. I could have started the next part of my journey, which was recovery. But I made a decision to go do one more because I want people to understand at the highest level, when you're broken, when you're defeated, when you've achieved your goal, when you've celebrated, when you, any of those scenarios, you can get up and do one more. And sometimes you're going to have to get up and do that one more by yourself.
James, did you decide that? When did you decide to do the extra one?
Yeah. So the concept was actually brought up really early in the campaign by one of my wingmen, Casey. And I almost punched him in the face when he said it because it was like day 15 or something. And I was seriously broken. That's where I was having the peak of the shin pain. I developed a stress fracture. We thought my leg was going to break during the marathon. And I was like, dude, it's off the table. We're not doing it. He was like, but how cool would it be if me, you and Aaron just went out and did one more with nobody else? And I was like, dude, it would be cool, but I can't even conceptualize the amount of pain I have to manage tomorrow. And then for 85 more days, shut the hell up. And so it didn't get brought up again. And you obviously have a paradigm shift in thinking when you're on a different part of the journey. So when I was in the mid 90s, I was like, because before when you've got 85 to go and you're only 15 in, you're like, I can't think about doing 85 more plus one more. That's not even comprehensible. But when you only have five left and you've done 95, you can go, what's one more? So it's amazing that paradigm shift to I can't comprehend one more to then the conversation changes to what's one more. And so the final 100th day was on a Tuesday. And by Saturday, I had cemented the decision to do it, contacted the core members of my team. We didn't tell anybody else. We contacted my cycling jersey company, and they said, we can make a jersey in one day. And I will drive it from California to the finish line. And they handed me the 101 jersey at the finish party for the 100. Awesome. And after doing interviews and signatures and pictures for 4 hours, I went home, I got on the massage table, and we did our therapy session and got up on day 101 and did another 2.4, another 112, and another 26.2.
Good grief. I got to know, like, the fact that I wasn't expecting you to say on day 15, honestly, I was expecting it to be much later, but you had mentioned like you thought your leg was broke and you keep going, and this was early on.
Yep.
And like, I got to understand, how did you specifically mentally prepare knowing the pain that you're going to continue to go through that? Or like, I feel like early on had to be very difficult, or maybe it wasn't, but was there some sort of like routine that you like religiously followed to be mentally prepared, not only just for the next day's event, but for the rough night you're about to go through and the lack of sleep and those things? Like, you got to walk me through that.
Yeah, I was just relying 100% on past experience that we'd have navigating these types of things. And our team's the only team in the world that has gone through 50 consecutive and experienced what that level of exhaustion, chaos, and confusion was like. And so the team sat down, and we had multiple meetings and meetings that I wasn't involved in. They were like, because really it's the two wingmen and my wife, Sunny. Those are the core three, and then me. So we're the four. And there was a lot of meetings that I wasn't invited to where they said, okay, let's solve the problems that we had on the 50. Because the whole premise from the 100 was, okay, if we can remove chaos, if we can put teams and systems in place, can we double what everybody said was impossible? Can we go and defy logic? And so we were solely basing it off of experience. And, you know, I got out of shape in the 6 years because I was traveling around the world, touring 48 countries, being wined and dined. And, and when we made the decision, it was seriously 1 year ago from 2 days ago, November 1st, where I did a 4-month training camp to get ready for the most impossible endurance feat in history. And so I went into this physically unprepared, but mentally at the top of my game from past experience. And I was relying too heavily on past experience to get me through it, and underestimated and a little bit naively, because I should know better, but how big of a toll physically would take. And so we got into an injury issue very early on because of the short training camp we did. So the 100 quickly became pain and injury management in order for us to keep going, because I wasn't going to quit. And early on, I had that super intense stress fracture on my shin, and the pain would build throughout the marathon. And I knew eventually that I was going to take a step and my leg was going to break. And that was going to be the only public, you know, reason the public would say, okay, you went until you snapped a bone. You probably, you know, did everything you could. And so I wasn't going to quit. And that was going to be that in my mind at the time, that's what was going to take that's what it was going to take me off the project. And that's eventually what was going to stop the project. And, long story short, but one of the best or the best in the U.S. As far as carbon plated shin braces lives on the trail that we were running on. And he came out. What's that?
That worked out.
Yeah. Well, he comes out and he's like, hey, have you ever heard of a carbon plated shin brace? I've been watching your story. We actually are the U.S. leaders in this and one of the only ones that do it. We make a custom carbon brace that offloads the weight off of your shin, allows that bone to heal, and you can continue moving. And I was like, that sounds amazing. How do I get one of those? And he's like, well, they're custom made. They take about 6 months. And I'm like, I kind of need one today. And so he shows up on the trail with this one that they had made for someone else. And he's like, I can machine tool this. It's going to take some effort. Put it on. Tell me where some rub spots are. I'll meet you at the next block. And he would meet me in the next block. I'd show him where it was touching. He would take it in the back of his truck. He'd do some machine milling. He'd bring it back out and he'd say, try this on. And he'd meet me at the next block. And we'd repeat that process until I didn't have any touch points on my shin and the pain was gone because it completely offloaded that entire bone. I was in that shin brace doing an Ironman a day for 5 weeks, allowing that thing to heal. And I was being super patient. And to be honest with you, I've said this on Ed's podcast, it turned out to be one of the biggest blessings of the whole campaign because I had to shut it down to walk in the marathons. And it allowed people that were flying in from around the country and the world to participate with us. It allowed them to be able to do it with us because they weren't in the shape to run. And so every single day without fail, I would hear somebody say, I'm so grateful you're walking because it has allowed me to be part of your journey and it's impacting me and my journey greatly. And so just, we never know when our suffering or our trauma or the trials that we're going through is going to actually impact and benefit someone else's life and give them hope. And so sometimes our greatest trials are somebody else's biggest blessings.
Dude.
And so I'm so grateful that I was, that I was put into that shin brace and it was so hard for me, right? Because I'm like, I want to showcase my athleticism. I don't want to just complete these. I want to put forth an athletic, some physicality in this, everything today. I want to put forth this big effort. I wanted to go out there so badly and just be like, just drop a mic every single day. And I still got to, because I completed it and it was under the circumstances. But it was just really, really hard for me because I had to walk. I was so broken that I had to walk, and it just blessed so many other people's lives that I'm grateful that it happened.
Dude, you said something like super profound that I heard, and I might get it wrong, but I'm going to be close. And I'm guessing you've probably said this before because you got emotional when you said it, which then made me emotional when you said it. But in regards to you, you know, not giving up, you know, or quitting because it went down, like because you were injured or whatever, you had said, I think it was, if I quit now, who am I going to miss giving hope to? Am I close? Yeah. Somewhere, something along those lines. But it was, you were talking about someone, and actually I was going to talk about this a little bit later when I asked you about quitting, but it kind of went there. You had said, I think someone had come up to you and said that to you, like it, that, hey, thank you for not, you know, for not quitting or something along those lines. And you gave hope to this person.
Yeah. Like, yeah. We had so many stories on the journey where someone would send us a message or show up and tell us a story of their journey, of some unbelievable things that they were dealing with that, you know, obviously my suffering that I do is intentional. Like I put myself out there, I do that.
Right.
And it took me a long time to realize it, but by me intentionally suffering, I joke all the time. I say, like, I don't know why God gave me the gift of suffering. Like this, the world's crappiest gift,
yeah, dude.
Talent to have. But I've learned over time that talent and me suffering intentionally gives people on their journey where they are not intentionally suffering, but they are suffering. And I can't tell you how many different stories came in across the internet and through our DMs and people that visited and told us that story. And then I would always get the question, hey, who motivates the motivator to keep going? Like why, like on day 59, when we crashed, they were like, why did you keep going? You'd reset your history. You redid the 50 brilliantly. You've broken a record 9 more straight days. You just broke your back. You were knocked unconscious. Why do any more? Let alone 41 more and then one more on top of that. And that was my answer. My answer is because I don't know who hasn't heard our story yet and who I'm missing the opportunity to give hope on the journey that they're struggling through. And so for me, the person that motivates the motivator is the people that we're inspiring around the world and the people that are actually suffering because of a terrible incident that has happened in their life. And somehow our journey is giving them hope to continue on their journey. And if I quit on day 85, who am I missing? I got a message the other day from a lady and she said, I had never heard of you. a friend of mine told me who you were. I showed up on day 100 and I ran that marathon behind you guys. And from that moment on, I've run a 5K every single day. I've completely changed my life. She didn't know anything about days 1 through 99. She didn't know anything about the 50-50. She didn't know anything about any of the previous decade of challenges we've done. She heard about our story on day 100. And the title of the message was, "You Changed My Life." Damn. So I would have regretted quitting on day 85, 59, whatever it is, because who did I miss giving hope to on their journey? Who did I miss getting an opportunity to impact someone's life for the better and change it? To receive an email where somebody says, "You've changed my life." There's no greater reward. There's no amount of money. There's no check somebody can write me to have that feeling, that emotion. And it's all because I made a decision to continue to show up on the journey and fulfill the commitment that I said to myself that I would do 100.
So good, man. That's incredible. I knew I was going to butcher it, but you knew where I was going with it.
No, that was so good. Now you, I think it's your wife who's quoted as saying, Sonny, that is quoted as saying something about, you know, when you're chasing something, you're chasing something. You never actually catch it. You're always chasing something. What's it like when you accomplish something like 100 full distance triathlons, and does it feel like you've caught it? What are you still chasing? How do you stay motivated? How do you keep an edge? And great, how do you chase for that long?
Great question. Very hard to answer. That's a huge misconception about who I am and what I do, because a lot of people that go on a journey like this or go on a personal struggle for their boundaries or their borders, they've either had a troubled past, or they're running from something, or they're doing some type of replacement therapy from addiction, or they've drug it, whatever it is.
Yep.
I had an amazing upbringing. I'm not running from anything. I'm running towards potential. And it's always interesting when you finish something like this and chasing that goal of 100, redefining what people thought was possible, because there's three phases to anything, right? There's preparation, execution, and then recovery. And I'm in that recovery phase. Obviously we broke our back and have to deal with that. I've got a lot of brain cognitive therapy issues. I had some brain MRIs done, and my brain is stuck in hyperdrive, meaning I can accomplish simple tasks, but my brain has to work 5 times as hard in order to accomplish them. And so I'm in a constant state of fight or flight, and it's massively exhausting. And so by the end of the day, by now 4 o'clock, I'm just like, oh my gosh, put me to bed. Just because my brain's been firing all day long. Great news is in a couple of weeks, I start cognitive therapy where we can reset those brain pathways. Your brain's a muscle, and it can be taught and learned. And so super, super grateful that one of the world leading places is right here by my house, literally 10 minutes away. And so I'll do a 30-hour all intensive brain reset repatterning that I'm super looking forward to. So, you know, I'm 100% satisfied. I wasn't satisfied after the 100, I mean, after the 50, but I didn't know what was next until the opportunity presented itself. We'd made some mistakes during the 50 that I wanted one day to ratify and put to bed. And we did that. And we left no doubt to who we were, who we said we were, who we claimed to be, who we, whatever anybody wants to say. Like, we left no doubt to who we were. There's zero asterisks on the 100. Not a single soul on the planet can deny the fact that we covered that 140.6 every damn day, rain, sleet, snow, whatever it was, for a quarter of a year.
It's incredible, dude. It's incredible.
That was a vulnerable statement talking about what you're going through in your recovery. Is that the compounding impact of endurance sports over a 10-year period of time, or did this 100 really set you kind of in a different pathway?
I think for sure the 100 was an absolute tipping point. My entire career, I've had multiple concussions with bike crashes. I've obviously had a career of wrestling where who knows how many concussions back in the 90s, they were like, go sleep it off. You're fine, you know? And there wasn't as much education as there is today on concussion protocols and things like that. And so I think it was my entire career, but the hunt had really pushed it over the top. Getting knocked out in that bike crash was massive. And then you go into a protective state from the chaos, from the trauma, over a quarter of a year, and you slowly slip into that state. And I fully would have said I wasn't in a trance or protective state while I was in the 100 until I stopped and came out of it. Had somebody asked me on day 99 how many I could have done, easy answer, 200. because you're in that moment, you're grinding, and just you have limitless potential because your brain is so hardcore protecting you from what's actually going on. And that just showcases to the highest level how powerful the mind is. Well, day 102 and 103 happened, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't function. And my favorite story is I'm driving down the freeway with my wife, and the speed limit's 80 miles an hour. And she looks over to me and she goes, hey, sweetie, you're going 45 miles an hour. You may want to pick it up a little bit. And my kids would joke all the time. They're like, hey, Dad, can we help you find something? Because I would just be like walking around the house right after the 100. Because you don't know what to do. Your whole life is, you do all these projects. And when you're in the middle of a product, you have one task, one objective. And then as soon as that's taken off the table, you go, huh, I don't know what to do now. And then you tap onto it, the cognitive brain fog and confusion and coming out of a traumatic state where your brain's protecting you. It's scary. And you realize, holy hell, I'm the provider for 9 people. My wife's parents live with us too. It's like, I'm responsible for 9 people. I've got to get this right. And I got to get up on stage. I got to be able to deliver. It's a performance. It's exhausting up there. Yeah. I'm looking at my calendar in January and I'm like, I've got 10 speaking events. And in 1 week I've got 6, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, if I don't fix this and I get to that point, I'm going to be on my back every night in a hotel room, just like completely wiped out.
Yeah, dude. I don't feel like, I almost just said, yeah, man, I know when I go and speak, every time I get off, I feel exhausted, but I don't want to sound like a big sissy compared to what you're doing.
Well, no, I mean, even Ed Milet said it in his breakout thing. He's like, when I get up on stage, I pour everything I have into it. And I'm the same way when I'm on stage. Like, I get off and I'm like, whoo, that was like everything I had. I need to take a nap. And people are like, hey, let's go party. And I'm like, I need a hot minute. Like, that was, I just gave you everything I had. And so, yeah, when I look at my calendar and I'm like, oh man, I've got 10 events in January. I'm like, oh boy, I gotta fix this real quick.
You know what?
I'm grateful.
Yeah. You could not have it. And that would be way worse. You know what I mean? Like,
oh my gosh. Yeah. I am definitely not complaining. I will deal with the insane schedule I have coming up next year. I mean, I'm almost booked out the entire year for
24. Man, I'm excited for you. That's fantastic. I mean, it's cool that you get to continue to put the story to use again and again and again. And you probably don't even know the half of the people that you've impacted by it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how you could, unless people are just constantly reaching out to you.
I would say we know of less than 5% of the people we've impacted.
Hey, listeners, I know, I'm sorry to cut this off. It's so good, but you're going to have to tune in next week to episode 101 to hear the final part of the story with my man James Lawrence, the Iron Cowboy. Part 2 next week. Tune in. Until next time, we'll see you. Welcome to the Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show. So stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.